All right, good evening everyone. Welcome to the live dev blog for the evening. I am Mindstar, and with me today I've got Grayscale and Tony G. Grayscale, of course, being one of our game designers, and Tony G, who is hot off the press from writing the Eve novel. So we'll start with Tony. How are you this evening?
I'm doing good, Mindstar. How are you?
I'm fantastic. It's good to hear your voice again. I've missed those sultry tones. And Grayscale, how are you?
Not doing too badly.
That's fantastic. Well, we've had a bit of a whirlwind day in the Eve universe today. We've had a little bit of conflict going on between the Galente and Kaldari factions. It seems that there's been a little bit of a accident with a mothership and a station colliding. So Tony's going to kick us off this evening with just reading a little excerpt from his novel, and he's going to perhaps shed some light on what's going on today.
Okay, if you've been paying attention, you know there's been a little bit of news, and I think the pot was stirred a little bit today. So the part that I'm going to read is picks up just a little bit before the accident happens, and then takes you through a little bit of what happens afterwards. So bear with me. My English tends to butcher a lot of things as I try to read, so hang in there. This shouldn't last longer than 5 minutes. Okay. Otra was scared to die, but thankful for the chance to feel like a human being again. I love you, Mila. I'm your brother, so I'm going to go first. The angel of death was staring Otra right in the eyes. I'll go quietly, he thought. Just don't come for her for a long time. Please. The FNS Wandering Saint glided silently, as all things did in space, unwavering and unstoppable, with terrible purpose and magnificent beauty, and slammed into the station with apocalyptic force. The leading edge of the Nyx passed through the unshielded armor with horrific ease, pulverizing deck after deck, penetrating deeper and deeper inside until striking one of the main support structures. The abrupt halt of momentum caused the aft remnants of the Nyx to collapse forward into the expanded cavity of molten metal before it, ripping its reactors apart in dual, inefficient nuclear explosions that vaporized several cubic kilometers of metal and flesh in an instant. The concussion wave split through the station with invincible cruelty, collapsing bulkheads and shattering reinforced composite alloy like brittle rust as its explosive force extended violently throughout the entire structure. As billions of horrified people watched throughout New Eden, a fireball dozens of kilometers in diameter lit the space of Malkalin in a brilliant flash, marking the deaths of more than 300,000 Kaldari souls, and with them, the only man who could stop them all from falling into the abyss. The wails and screams of Mila Garayushi could be heard from every deck aboard the Raven. As the space surrounding the burning station erupted into a light show of cannon fire and missile contrails, Corvin's attention was divided evenly between his threat indicators and the sister readings of his Tyrannus. The question of who shot whom first was irrelevant. No captain was going to wait for an interpretation of the rules of engagement. There was an expanding disk of nuclear fire radiating from the corporate headquarters of the Ishikon Corporation, a wicked bow wave upon which the souls of thousands had perished. Those pilots and captains who witnessed the cataclysm firsthand were now being directed by a deadly mix of survival instincts and rage. For the Galentians, escape was impossible. Multiple Kaldari Navy interdictors appeared moments before the collision, and their warp inhibitor fields were now overlapping the entire sphere of engagement for the Federation ships. Command and control was in shambles. Admiral Noir had been in charge of the entire battle group, and every ship within it depended on the Nyx for both firepower and defenses. No captain would be able to take effective charge of a scenario like this. For most of the crewmen aboard the Federation ships in Malkalin, this battle would be their last. The first casualties were the squadrons of orphan fighters aimlessly orbiting the ruined station. Without the carrier's telemetry feeds, they were mercilessly obliterated by the sentry gun batteries defending the remnants of the station. In groups of up to three at a time, the nimble crafts vanished in puffs of light, their pilots vaporized instantly. Missiles were tracking Corvin's ship. It was impossible to evade them completely, but if he kept his speed up, he could perhaps survive long enough to give one or more of his comrades time to escape. Locking onto the nearest interdictor, he used the Tyrannus' speed to close range quickly and activated stasis webifiers, crippling the enemy craft's momentum. angling sharply to avoid a collision. Corvin would open fire with each of his railguns as he streaked past, peppering his target with antimatter slugs that impacted against its shields and armor plating in violent bursts of coruscation. Unable to maneuver, the interdictor would return fire with the barrage of missiles, but it couldn't withstand the sustained punishment of the Tyrannus' guns. In a brilliant flash that Corvin would never forget, the interdictor exploded, taking its single warp inhibitor field down with it. But his elation vanished as his Tyrannus was buffeted by a series of armor-shredding explosions. Condor-class Caldari Navy interceptors were now descending upon him like a swarm of angry wasps. When one cut across the nose of his ship, he instinctively turned after it and fired. Surprisingly, the Caldari interceptor exploded immediately. The craft was already heavily damaged when Corvin attacked it. But the next missile wave had arrived just milliseconds before their impact. The Tyrannus' disaster management CPU jettisoned its pod. Corvin could feel the tiny craft slipping out through an ejection port in the hull, while the rest of his ship was torn to scraps in a series of explosions. Corvin knew his hunters wouldn't stop there. Before he could escape, his pod was immobilized, first by a warp scrambler, and then by a stasis web. All he could do now was wait for his real capsular legacy to begin, the cheat death as the body he was born in was executed. He absorbed every detail of his surroundings as the missiles came for him, the burning station listing to one side with the grievous wound in her midsection. He wondered how many people, if any, were still alive inside. He saw the spine of a Federation Navy Megatron crack in half as railgun fire eviscerated its hull. Amazingly, its heavy neutron blasters kept firing for a few moments after the cabin lights inside went dark for good. More death, he thought, as the first explosion rocked his pod. How many crew on a Megatron, 600, maybe 700 people, blotted out of existence just like that? The pod started to break apart, venting his flesh to the void, but Corvin felt nothing except the distinct sensation of being pulled away from reality. He saw a corpse floating in space, his own, and then a glimpse of the Malkalin system's sun. He was suddenly thrust towards this orange-yellow fire, and then there was a tranquil blackness followed with the crisp, smooth female voice of a computer. "Good morning, pilot. How do you feel?" Corvin opened his cloned eyes for the first time, light years away from the spot where he had perished. Safely within the boundaries of Federation space, he was certain that other capsuleers from the same battle were awakening nearby as well.
Wow, that's a pretty full-on story there. So I guess this is going to kick off some fairly interesting conflict between the different factions within the galaxy. So which brings us to the main topic for the evening, which is, of course, the Empyrean Age expansion. And so we've got Tony here, who of course just read to you, and we've got Grayscale, who's one of the game designers who's been heavily involved with setting up the Empyrean Age expansion. So I'll hand it over to you, perhaps, Grayscale, and maybe you can take us through exactly what the Empyrean Age expansion is going to mean for the Pilots of Eve.
Okay. In Empyrean Age, the big kind of central feature bringing out is factional warfare, which we've been talking about for a long time. We, you know, waiting for the right opportunity to bring it out, and now's the time everything's come together. Tony's got his book finished, giving us the in and all the design aspects are coming together nicely. So we decided that this was when we were going to go for it. Factional warfare is... I've put out a general blog already explaining kind of the philosophy behind it. The intention is, from a mechanical point of view, it's acting as a halfway house between high sec space and 0.0. We've got a lot of players living in high sec quite happily, and a lot of players living in null sec quite happily. But it's always been a bit of a challenge for people to move from one to the other. Obviously, it happens, but you know, for a good proportion of people, they manage that transition and it's fine. But equally, for some people, it's too big of a jump to take on their own, and so we're looking for, you know, adding a way for people to make that transition more easily. What factional warfare focuses around is a combat environment, basically. As you can tell from Tony's reading and from the events that, you know, have been going on in the news articles, the political landscape in New Eden is not in a good place right now. There's conflict coming. and the Capsuleers are going to be at the forefront of that conflict. Obviously, the Aman, Mimitar are old foes. The Kaldai and the Galente similarly have a long-standing history, and so the Capsuleers are going to be there, going to be on the front lines as these relationships start to really deteriorate and break down, and we're going to give the Capsuleers, the players, a chance to sign up with their chosen faction and get involved in the fighting.
All right, well, that all sounds pretty exciting. I guess one of the things that everyone's here today to find out about is how is it all going to work? What is the process that or the gameplay that's going to be involved behind all this? We're hearing things like that it'll be a nice sort of bridge between high sec and zero sec, and players will be able to sort of engage in PvP if they would like to. So what sort of mechanisms are we going to see, Grayscale?
Well, how it's going to work is, it's going to be an opt-in system. We toyed briefly with the idea of making it more compulsory, but that didn't seem in the spirit of EVE, and it didn't seem like a good decision for a number of reasons. So you'll be choosing, if you want to fight. Once you're signed up, you kind of join one of what we're calling the four Capsulean militias. It's a kind of paramilitary type organization. And they'll be at war with their enemies. The wars will extend everywhere, but the focus is on certain areas of low sec. It's low sec space in between the warring factions, basically. It's kind of a border zone. The space is up for grabs. So players will be in there. They'll be heading into the combat areas. You've got kind of two choices in terms of getting involved. Firstly, there's mission content. This is aimed at players who kind of just want to be told what to do and where to go and want to get into the fighting but don't want to do all the kind of, sitting around or flying around looking for targets or whatever. So you'll be able to take a mission and it will send you into enemy space to complete an objective. The objectives themselves are not particularly challenging compared to other missions. I mean, they're still, you're going to have a fight on your hands, but the real challenge is going to be, infiltrating the combat area, getting to your mission, surviving that and getting out again in one piece without getting brought down by, enemy ships roaming the area. For the players who want a more kind of free-form environment, we're distributing new exploration type sites around the area, so encounter strength sites that you can find on your onboard scanner, so there's no special equipment required. These sites, you scan them down, you go to them. There'll be a warp gate at most of them. This is being used to restrict ship classes who can enter. So there'll be different sort of sizes of site. Some of them for Tech 1 frigates and destroyers. Some of them, bigger ships, Tech 1 cruisers, and the biggest ones, Tech 2 cruisers, and then there's a couple which are completely ungated, anything goes sites. So they're going to be the sites of the biggest battles, but there's opportunities for all sizes of ships, all sizes of player, all kind of, budgets of player to get involved, as it were. Inside the sites, there'll be some NPCs flying around, there'll be strategic locations, and these are kind of the centrepiece of the site. There'll be an objective type thing, which you want to take over. You can, both sides, the defenders and the attackers, can kind of take control of the site. So you're battling over this object. It's a timer-based object rather than a hit-point-based object. We've done a lot of stuff in the past with things being tied to hit points. One of the observations we've had is that when your objective is hit point based, the more ships you bring, the faster it goes down. And this leads to bigger and bigger fleets. So instead we're experimenting here with a timer based system, so that it's the number of ships you bring doesn't affect how quickly the objective completes. So while obviously, a bigger fleet will be more easy to defend stuff, you're less likely to get ambushed by players, you can deal with it better, but it's not doing it faster. So at a certain point, it's, in terms of success and stuff, it's more efficient to split up and do multiple objectives. And if there's one big enemy fleet flying around, you just avoid them and you outmaneuver them, outsmart them. And so, it's not encouraging or forcing players to split up, but it's sort of subtly sort of hinting that to a more efficient way of doing things than as everyone turning up in a big blob and killing everything at once.
All right. Well, with that, I guess some of the changes that have been outlined, or the new mechanics that are coming in with this, these dead space areas that you'll be able to try and control, is if there are different sizes of ships being restricted into them, do you think that this is going to result in pilots with a similar skill level being able to engage sort of more fairly in PvP combat?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of one of the things we were driving at, is, you know, giving players a chance to sort of pitch themselves at things which are at the kind of level they're happy working at. I mean, if you just want to fly Tech 1 frigates and destroyers and stuff, if you haven't got the skills for anything more, you haven't got the money, you don't want to risk the money, or you just want to go back to flying Tech 1 frigates because it's really good fun, actually, it turns out, then, you know, that option is there for you. And there is, you know, the chance of running into one of these sites, into a veteran who's just like, oh, I'm going to fly a Tech 1 frigate today. But, you know, at that point, his skill points really aren't going to be, you know, he's not going to be leveraging his, you know, 60 trillion skill points or whatever very well, because he's still flying, you know, at the end of the day, a Tech 1 ship. There's only so many skill points that can really boost that. So it is, yeah, it's going to give less skilled players, less confident players, less rich players the chance to kind of have a fight on their own terms, but without forcing it. We're not limiting the number of people who can get involved. We're not instancing in the sort of strong sense of sealing off areas and saying only you can come in. We're not matchmaking fights, because that just to us doesn't feel like EVE. It's too kind of artificial and too restrictive. We're keeping everything open and flowing, but we're giving the opportunity to pick at what level you want to pitch yourself.
All right. Another question that seems to be coming up a lot, there are a lot of people asking in various different forms, how does the sort of the sign-up process for factional warfare work? If I'm a player and I decide that I want to sign up with the Mimitar and take the fight to the Amar, how do I go about it? What are the rules around me signing up for factional warfare?
Okay, there's two ways you can kind of get yourself involved. You can sign up as an individual, basically a sort of a freelance player. There's a set of new NPC corporations which have been created, linked to the militias. So you can just join one of those. It's like a normal NPC corp, but it's part of factional warfare. You know, you're counted as a factional warfare player for objectives and stuff. You're in the wars and everything. Or rather. There's, you know, basic requirements to join up. You need a faction standing from your chosen faction of like 0.5. It's a really, really low limit. It's just, you know, the factions aren't being very picky about who they select. Like, if they don't dislike you, if you've done, like, you know, a couple of jobs, then they're happy for you to sign up because they want people on their side. So it's a low barrier of entry there. You can also sign up an entire corporation. The CEO and the directors can, you know, using the same process, just, you know, say, I want to enlist my corporation. It's like joining an alliance, basically. Again, you need a corporation standing of 0.5 from your chosen faction, which is like an aggregate of all the player standings, an average of all the players in the corporation. It's not hard to do. Some corporations may need to shuffle a few things around, but it's, again, not a big requirement. And your corporation will be signed off, and it'll be flagged as a militia corporation, which means that, again, everyone inside the corporation counts as a faction warfare player for the objectives and for the rewards and everything, and is involved in the wars. It's a fairly straightforward process. So we're trying to keep the barriers of entry low so that everyone has a chance to get involved.
Okay. And what does that mean for players who are currently in alliances? Is there any hope for them? Will they need to leave their alliance or leave their corporation to participate?
Yeah, this is something of a hot topic. It's come up on the forums. It's going to be discussed in the dev blog, which should be out tomorrow morning. But our current position, which is, I know is going to upset a few people at first, is that alliances can't sign up and corporations that are in alliances can't sign up. This sounds a bit counterproductive from some angles, particularly, and I know that the role-playing alliances in particular are having issues with this, and we're going to work with them to talk through all this stuff. But the reasoning behind it, there's two levels. From a game design point of view, it causes us issues. I mean, there's a whole load of things we need to deal with in terms of how the corporations are handled, how the alliance is handled, how the mechanics are all going to work out, chat channels, and there's a lot of little things, and there's big things as well. From a kind of semi-role-playing, semi-sort of sociological aspect, we really want to impress on people that when you're signing up for factional warfare, you're kind of putting yourself under the command of the factions. You're not in a player sort of at the very top levels of the kind of strategic decision making. You're not in a player driven organization. You're in a MP driven organization. You're part of one of the sort of semi official military forces. We didn't want that level of kind of alliance level decision making to sort of be competing with the faction level stuff. There shouldn't be a question of divided loyalties there. Again, we kind of want to send a sort of a message out to the big 00 alliances that we're not impinging on their game and we're not interfering with their game, but equally we don't want to have alliances descending en masse onto factional warfare and saying, so and so massive space holding alliance is signing up with the Minmatar and we're going to steamroll everybody. I mean, obviously there's ways for players in alliances to get involved through, alt corps or specialized corps or whatever, or parking your alliance, or there's lots of different ways of doing it, but it's not as trivial as just signing up and letting players do it on the whim. You've got to make some effort, so you've got to be committed to it, and that's kind of part of what we're trying to do, is get people to understand kind of the commitment we want people to make and to take it seriously, and not just, and to make sure that everybody's on a reasonably level playing field and it's not being dominated by the large alliances. We talked to players about this at FanFest last year. Actually, we had a couple of roundtables, and this issue came up, and we did talk through it. And the opinion of the players there was that keeping alliances out was a good idea, which made us feel a lot more comfortable with it then, and kind of drove that decision to be kept, to keep with that. It's still something that I believe is technically possible to change, but it's not something that we want to do right now. It's going to be difficult to do, and as I say, it contradicts some of our design goals, and it doesn't feel right from the setting point of view, and in the long run, it just doesn't seem like, or in the short run at least, it doesn't seem like it's going to be a good idea for the game, for the feature, and for the alliances in question, to be perfectly honest. So, yeah, it's something I'm expecting to discuss on the forums a lot more, and expecting people to be, to have something to say about, so I'm going to be listening and paying attention to that, definitely.
All right, well, that's good to hear. Now, from one side of the game to the other, we'll go from the alliances to people who are engaged purely just in PvE content, and I'm not going to say Care Bear, but I just said it. But I believe Tony is following this aspect of the Empyrean Age expansion quite closely. So, Tony, what do you think is going to be in store for those who are perhaps involved in the less adrenaline-pumping sides of EVE?
Well, as a career Care Bear for at least one of my alts, let me just say that factional warfare offers something to everybody, no matter what your game is in EVE. One is if you talk to hardcore PvPers, one thing they've been saying that for years is that one of the hardest things about EVE sometimes is that they spend 90% of their time looking for a fight. Well, in factional warfare, you're going to find a fight. I can promise you that. And if your gameplay is more of a Care Bear, you're more of an industrialist, you've always wanted to try PvP, but you're inherently intimidated by the odds. If your first experience as in PvP is, you spend an hour or two fitting your ship, and then maybe you get a friend to go out there with you, and then you jump into a camp with three motherships. It's just not fun. If you've ever been alpha striked during a fleet battle, that's not fun. And if that's the first experience that you have as a Care Bear aspiring to move into the PvP aspects of EVE, you're probably going to be pretty turned off from that. And what factional warfare is going to do is increase the odds. It's going to increase the odds of you getting into that fair fight. I mean, one of the reasons why that the tournaments are so successful is because, you know, it's like Matt said with skill points. In EVE, for the most part, the battle is won or lost in the fitting screen. You know, it's how you're dressed for the occasion. And the things about the tournament that work so well, why they're so popular, is because all the thinking, all of the calculus, the strategy that goes into the way you fit your ship and the way that the people in your fleet fit their ships is going to make the difference in the fight. I mean, during the last Alliance tournament, you know, when I saw all those Thoraxes going in for the win, I mean, that was just absolutely brilliant. That was some of the most wonderful things I've ever seen in the game. And I think that factional warfare is the best way to bridge that gap. It's a way to bring that type of all the best parts of the Alliance tournament and all the best parts of the way that you could try to sell PvP to people that might not otherwise be interested in trying it, and wrapping it all up into one perpetual game design feature that really just brings something to everybody. And that kind of unison, instead of, you know, the way that we're trying to bring things together is really reflective of the entire expansion. You know, the way that we're rolling out news right now, the way that we're trying different things with trailers, the way we're using the setting to promote the aspects of this, it's kind of fits with our philosophy right now. It's just what we've done is that we've added a coat of paint to the sandbox. It's still a sandbox. This is still EVE. You can still wield absolute power in this game. What we've done is that we've, with factional warfare, is that we've demonstrated how you can actually get there. Because for so many of the players, in that type of gameplay seems inaccessible or it's impossible. It's not. And factional warfare is going to help you get there if you just, you know, you're willing to get your feet wet in these things. Most people that try PvP for the first time, 9 times out of 10, if they don't have that Gate Camp or Alpha Strike experience, they say it's the most fun they've had in the game. And then they ask themselves why they haven't tried it sooner. So this is, I'm really excited about it. I mean, all the guys that are testing here are really excited about it. It's just a lot of damn fun. And, the flavor of it, you know, with the setting kind of supporting the battles that are going on there from the imaginative or immersive aspect of it, just gives the whole thing that much more flavor, I think.
Yeah, well, certainly I can say from my own experience that in the last couple of weeks when I've been testing some of the functionality, it really is a blast to get involved in some of these new areas. It's great fun. And going back to some of the mechanics of the actual functionality of factional warfare, there's some questions about how these battle areas work coming in on the forums. So perhaps for Grayscale again, people are wondering, are you able to use things like micro-warp drives, cyno fields, capital ships in these battle areas?
This is something we have been thinking about. We, keeping in mind the way PvP fits are going on TK at the moment, we felt that while kind of arenas sort of dead space areas, which Afterburner only, are interesting tactically, and we like them. We didn't want to feel that we were kind of forcing people to kind of gimp their setups to fit things they wouldn't normally fit, just to get in these areas. With if they're fighting people outside, you know, on gates and stuff where they don't have this advantage. So we've got a bit of a code revision in so that we can now allow people to use micro-warp drives, but still at the same time restricting things like cyno fields and restricting capital ships and restricting the kind of instant warp-in aspect. So it's kind of like a hybrid dead space area. You can micro-warp drive, and we've got the option to add other things to that list, but at the same time we can prevent cyno fields, we can prevent capital ships coming into certainly the ones we've got with gates on, so that you're not going to be blubbed by a mothership or a Titan or whatever. It's still kind of under control. There's a couple of, like I said earlier, there's a couple of the combat sites where there's no gates, so you can bring in your carrier or whatever if you want to risk it. And I'm expecting it to be quite a big risk and expecting quite a few capital kills in those. But yeah, the majority of the sites will be micro-warp driver, yes, but capital ships, no.
All right, and expanding a little bit further down the track, when players have been taking these dead space areas, these battle areas, is there going to be any lasting effect on the the systems and the layout of Eve. You know, it's, are the Galente going to be able to take systems off the hands of the Caldari and vice versa?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've always been planning to have this thing because we felt a little bit hollow if you have all these fights and then you can't see what's happening. So, if you sort of capture enough areas, if you win enough objectives and so on, then eventually, and the defenders can't, you know, beat you back, then the systems are going to change hands. You know, within the sort of combat areas, it's a bit of a free-for-all, so you can get into that system and you can take it back for the Amal, for the Caldari, or the Galente, or the Mimitar, however. You can have things changing size, and there'll be a map for you, so you can see how the war's going and sort of where the front lines are and all this kind of stuff, and really see that you're having an impact on the war effort. It's not just for you, it's for the faction, and you can really see that coming through.
All right, and on another side of it, there was mention alongside the areas that are the specific battle arenas, there's been mention of the fact that players will be able to do missions for their chosen faction as well. Could you perhaps explain a little bit about what that's about?
Yeah, I mean, like I said earlier, it's like the special missions, we've got new agents for, you know, militia agents who will send you off on specialised missions. We've made exclusively for factional warfare. There's like 160 or something of them that the mission guys have made, which was quite an effort, but it got done like it always does. And they're set up so that they'll send you into enemy territory, so, you know, that's where the big risk is. It's getting there and getting in and doing the job and getting out again, and like the objectives are kind of toned down from what you'd expect from a normal mission, but you're vulnerable getting there, and the mission, once you arrive at the mission, like a celestial beacon will appear in the system overview so that everyone can see where you are and see where you're fighting, so that, you know, you can expect people to come in and try and stop you. The same deal works with the combat sites. They'll drop a beacon so everyone can see. There's no need to scan people down once these sites are active, so you know, you're going to expect to have a fight on your hands, and you want to get in and you want to get it done and you want to get out. We've had a few upgrades to the way the missions are authored as well, so there's some new effects and tricks that we can play, which we're beginning to make use of, and there's some really quite nice scenes that the guys have set up. Stuff that you won't have seen before in missions, and I think people quite appreciate what we've got in store, so.
Oh, that sounds pretty good then. Going back onto some of the features, just more related to sign-ups and who's participating and who isn't participating, there's a few questions about the possibility of griefing within factional warfare, and things like if people are going to be able to sign up for the same faction, will they be able to shoot other members of that faction just for trying to cause some trouble, or is that going to be prevented?
Not without penalty, no. I mean, it's low-sec space, so we're not going to stop you from shooting whoever you can target. That will kind of take the point out of things. But it's treated like an alliance, so that you can't shoot people in other corporations. Similarly, the NPC Corp is an NPC Corp. You can't shoot fellow Corp members. And you're going to take standing hits, obviously, for killing members of the NPC Corporation. And that's not going to work out well on your record, put it that way, because there's various things tied into those standings, including like a check every day to make sure that your standings are high enough, your faction standings and your corp standings are high enough that you know you're still eligible. And if you're not, then you're going to get a warning, and then you're going to get told to move on, do something else, because faction doesn't like you anymore. But I mean, this is one of the things we want to keep a close eye on is the amount of griefing and stuff, and we're going to expect a certain amount of people to be trying to game the system because, you know, they're EVE players, they're smart. Some of them like to cause a little bit of trouble. So, you know, people are going to have to stay on their toes still. It's still a dangerous area. But we're not, certainly not encouraging people or giving them tools to do so where it's easy to stop it. So it's like something we're working against, but we're not going to be too harsh. We're not going to be too kind of restrictive about it because it's not the EVE way.
So it's essentially, if you start misbehaving in factional warfare, you can actually get booted out of it. That's awesome. All right. Well, moving on. I guess one of the other areas that you've touched on a couple of times is that the main focus of the factional warfare area of this expansion is on low security space. Are there going to be any features of factional warfare that take it into high security space or elsewhere within the EVE universe?
Initially, at least, we're staying out of... We're not doing anything special for NullSec. It's... Obviously, there's factions out there, and there are things that we're considering bringing in. The whole framework's been built with the aim of making sure it's extensible, making sure we've got the option to drop in extra factions if we need to, but they're not going to be in for the initial release because we want to make sure the system is right before we take it bigger. In terms of high sec, the wars that we're using are, in most respects, they're wars, you know, they apply universally, so if you're in Kaldari Militia and you see a guy in the Galenti Militia in high sec, then, you know, you can shoot at him without consequence. But in order to, you know, while we wanted to have that functionality, we wanted to allow people to travel through high sec, we wanted to allow them to fight there if they really want to, but we want to encourage people to stay in, you know, more in the low sec areas and, you know, avoid high sec camps, avoid huge fights in Jeetra and so on. So if you're in a militia, then the two enemy factions, like if you're Amar, then the Galenti and the Mimitar, they're not going to appreciate you being in their high-tech space. The faction navies are gonna come after you. This isn't the customs, it's not the police, it's not Concord, it's faction navies. The ones that you used to get, if you have like a -5 standing, they'll be after you automatically, and they've been improved slightly because we decided that the two frigates and a cruiser spawn was a little bit piddly. So we've beefed them up. So if you're going to be running around in high sec, in hostile high sec, you can expect a rather warm reception in terms of weapon fire and stuff. They won't web you, or they will web you. They won't scramble you, so you'll never be warp scrambled one. So you can always cut and run, unless you know some newbie in a rifter in the opposite faction happens to be there and scrambles you, in which case you're probably in trouble. But yeah, so it's kind of you can go there, but it's not really encouraged and. You know, it's gonna make life difficult for you, but it's still possible. We like the possibility of players making a run through high sec to, you know, to get to a different zone or whatever. But we're trying to, you know, limit the amount of fighting that's happening so that there's still like a reasonable degree of safety in high sec space.
Sounds pretty fine to me. So with regards to another question that I know people very much interested in hearing answered is what sort of things can players expect to get in return for all of their hard work and work on blowing the opposing faction up? What can they expect to get in return from their faction that they've chosen to support?
Well, there's kind of sort of three levels, I guess four levels of reward that we're looking at. The first one is in terms, obviously, there's NPCs out there and they're going to drop loot and they're going to drop lots of tags, hopefully. Which, you know, the NPC tags and the RP store offers are in fairly short supply, and this is going to be a good place to get a hold of them. And obviously, you know, the loot they drop and stuff, there's going to be rewards from missions and so on in that same kind of category. Mission rewards, obviously, usual payout. There's going to be certain rewards from capturing the objectives and stuff. And a lot of things are feeding into the second group of rewards, which is your corp standing with the NPC corp, your militia corp. That affects your rank with the faction. We've introduced a rank system. There's like 10 ranks for each faction, and as the standing goes up from completing missions, from completing objectives and so on, then you're going to rank up, and that's going to give you a nice fat chunky faction standing boost, and it's going to give you a really, really shiny medal. The archives have really outdone themselves. They look absolutely awesome. I want one. I want several. I want all of them, frankly. On top of that, the third level of reward is player loot. you're going to be PvPing. You're going to be killing people. You're going to be nicking all their stuff. That's kind of, you know, a big part of it. And the fourth level, and the level that really justifies the whole thing, is the fact that in our experience, for most players, not for all players, but for most players, PvP is really, really, really good fun. Like Tony touched on this. If you get especially the small gang stuff where you're running around and just having a blast and killing people and getting killed, and it's a cheap ship, so you don't mind. Most people I've worked with and played with find that the biggest adrenaline rush ever. People who've been playing for 5 years and PvP'd every day, and they still get the shakes after a fight. I've known people who've been really, really, really hardcore Care Bears and, like, industrials and stuff, and, like, never PvP'd, never wanted to PvP, and we've dragged them out in a corp operation, and they've, you know, got their first, they've, you know, gone out there and done their job and, say, tackled someone and died, and they come out and think, oh my god, that was the best thing I ever did, I died, it was awesome, it was so good, do it again, do it again, do it again. And then within a week, they're, like, the third person on the keyboard or something. If we didn't believe PvP was fun, we wouldn't be bothering doing this, but, you know, we really do believe, not for everybody, some people get killed and they say, I didn't like that, I don't want to do this again, and that's cool. You know, they've got high tech space, they've got missions, they've got mining, they've got industry, they've got all this stuff, that's cool, but we really want to give the people a chance, the people who would love PvP if they tried it but they've never quite got around to it, the chance, and the people who know that they love PvP and they want more of it, and they want more of, you know, a particular kind, they want smaller stuff and faster stuff and kind of less expensive stuff, and that's kind of the icing on the cake in terms of awards and stuff. Reward levels are something we're going to keep looking at, we're going to keep adjusting, we're going to keep tuning, we're going to maybe take up, maybe take down, we'll see how it goes, but ultimately the kind of the material rewards are secondary to the fact, should be secondary to the fact that you're having really, really good fun, you're enjoying yourself, and, you know, the rewards are there to make sure, you know, to get people in, and then to make sure that they're not having to leave every other day to go and make some more money, because, you know, they're flying cheap ships now and they're getting a decent amount of payback. But ultimately, the biggest reward should be that you're having a good time. And if you're having a good time, then, you know, that's enough for us.
That sounds pretty cool, too. I'm going to start to close things up a bit. I'm going to, I guess, open the floor a little bit. We've got one question which jumped out at me on the forums because I thought it was a great question. And I'm going to start with Tony, and I'll throw it to Grayscale, and I believe we may possibly even have CCP Hammer lurking somewhere in the shadows. So if he's around, we'll ask him as well. What do you think is the coolest feature of the Empyrean Age expansion, Tony?
I think just being able to find a fight really quick and having, you know, it's as close to instant action as you can really get in this kind of MMO. You know, the fights that last a long time are really just epic fun. I mean, that adrenaline rush is real, and I really can't wait to see a lot to actually rank up. I mean, you know, these things are, you know, to become a general someday, you know, on behalf of a faction and all these things are, I can't really put one thing at it because from our perspective here, we get to see all of it. And I think that really just being able to engage in these kind of battles almost at will, to be able to go out there and find them is what speaks to me the most about it personally.
All right, on to Grayscale. Grayscale, what do you think is the coolest feature?
Tony's gone and stole the most of my answer, to be honest. it's for me, I mean, I the ranks are awesome, and like the stuff we've got going, and the things like the stuff that the new objectives will mean for Warfare, we're looking closely at ways we can, if this works, to spin it out, is all important. But it's the fact that what we're trying to hit is, and it seems to be working now, we've been doing a lot of playtesting and it's really working out, it is like Tony says, it's almost instant action, but it's still Eve. There's still the consequence, it's still your ship on the line, it's still, you know, the positioning and the tactics and the psychology and the setups and all the stuff that makes Eve combat fun, and it's really not just the warp in and press buttons. It's all the stuff that surrounds combat and the thinking and the pure adrenaline that you get doing it, and having that kind of available for everybody, I think is gonna make a big difference to the game, and it's gonna hopefully have knock-on effects in a lot of other areas, and give us the option to carry the lessons and things learned across to other areas as well, and that's exciting for me.
Indeed, it is. I do believe we actually have CCP Hammer in the room now. Hammer, are you there?
I think so. Am I here?
Yes, you sound like you're here to me. That's pretty cool. Hammer, of course, for those that Great. Don't know, is the lead game designer for EVE Online. And he's come just in time to tell us all about what he thinks the coolest feature of the Empyrean Age is.
Well, I think Tony and Grayscale both did really good jobs answering the question, but if I had to pick a different answer than them, I'd say in the Faction Warfare UI, you've got a bunch of stats, and I'm a bit of a stat whore, and seeing my kills and losses and where the combat is, and, you know, I think that kind of stuff is really cool. So I think that's one of my favorite features, pretty much.
All right. Now, I know Grayscale has a whole list of extra things he wants to talk about that he's just sent to me. So, Grayscale, I know you've got some extra stuff that you want to talk about that's going to come on in Empyrean Age. So if you want to start speaking, you should go for it.
Yeah, the extra stuff, yeah. No, there's, I just wanted a chance. There's a lot of, quite a few little bits and bobs that we've been working on that are kind of going to get rolled into the expansion, and that I thought people would be interested in. For example, we're seeing a lot of talk about level 5 missions on the forums and the sort of the payouts thereof. We went back over things with a fine-tooth comb and sorted things out, and there were a few issues with the way rewards are being assigned that we've now corrected, so the payouts for level 5 missions should be going up by a fairly large amount, which should sort of resolve some of the issues that people were having with the amount of reward they were getting for them. We've also boosted the amount of people you can split the rewards within a gang from 5 to 10 because it seemed like a good idea. We've got some miscellaneous ship bits and bobs that are being dealt with. The 6th Amarian frigate is apparently been signed off and approved. I looked at it about 10 minutes ago, we just got it, well not 10 minutes ago, 10 minutes before the blog, we just got it rolled into our latest testing build. It looks awesome. I want one, I want several, I want lots. So that's that little hole is being filled in. Fendal and Nos have been working on some new faction cruisers for the 4 Empires. We're still working out exactly where they're going to show up. They need to be, you know, tweaked and tuned and so on. A process which is almost there, but, you know, it's ongoing. We want to make sure everything's right before we bring them out. So we're not exactly sure when they're going to hit, but it's going to be 3 new Tier 1 cruisers for the Kaldari, Galente and Mimitar, and the Tier 3, I think it is, the Omen for the Imar. So we're going to fill out the line of faction cruisers in the near future. What else? There's other bits and bobs. I know there's things being fixed and so on that fall under people's remits that I don't really want to divulge in case they're saving up for something exciting. But you know, there's things being done, things being tweaked that we're quite happy with. We just wanted to throw them out there and let people know about them.
All right, and it seems once I decided that I was going to wrap this up, I've been bombarded with a whole heap more questions, so I'll just keep going. This one is probably best going to swing over to Tony. People are very interested to know if there's anything at all going to happen with the Jove. It's one of those questions that keeps coming up every time. And so, Tony, is there anything happy?
Well, let me. Nothing is what it seems. As much as we've tied. You've been presented with a bunch of facts. You've seen video of what's going on. You heard a little bit about a little bit more than that if you listen to the beginning of the blog when we read a little bit about what happened afterwards. But nothing is ever quite what it seems, and that's completely by design. That's how we want it. And as far as the Jovians go, they play a very, 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 very small. They're almost not mentioned at all really in the book, and there's a good reason for that too. And you know, there's been clues in the fiction throughout about what's going on with them. And, you know, I think towards the end you'll know a little bit more. And Eve's got a long way to go. Well, we got more expansions to put out. We got more books to write. We got a lot of fiction we need to cover. And we're never, you know, going to shut the door on any idea that's out there. But at this point, that's all they are. The Joves haven't really progressed beyond anything more than just an idea. And slowly but surely, we're moving towards answering these questions definitively. But until then, you're just going to have to read on and just pay attention to the clues that we put out there.
All right. Well, with that, I think it's probably a good time to say thank you to all of our speakers for the evening, to Hammer, Grayscale, and Tony G. Thanks, guys, for coming along. I hope you enjoyed it. And to all the players who are listening in, I think we peaked at just over 2,500 users. Once again, Vivox doing an absolutely fabulous job of keeping eVoice up and running for this. And to everyone else, a good evening, and I'm sure that there will be notes in a forum thread about this dev blog available shortly. So with that, I'll bid you good night and safe flying.
I'd just like to add at the end, you know, things aren't done yet. Keep watching the news, keep watching the skies. There's more to come. 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 There's more to come.